Out front next, breaking news, a desperate search for survivors of the Florida condo collapse. About 100 people are still unaccounted for as I speak. I'm going to speak to a man whose mother and grandmother are missing tonight. Plus, breaking news, two major breakthroughs tonight for President Biden, a bipartisan deal on infrastructure, and this just in, a preliminary agreement on the police reform bill. And the Delta variant spreading in every state tonight. We're live in Missouri, where one city's COVID hospitalizations have more than tripled in the past few weeks. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. The breaking news. It is a race against time this hour. Rescuers in Florida desperately searching for nearly 100 people still unaccounted for after a condo high-rise just collapsed this morning. New video that we just got moments ago here shows a frantic effort underway by rescuers. This video that you see, this is in the flooded basement of that building. So the building's collapsed. You see that, you know, those collapse marks. And in that basement, people still desperately searching in Surfside, Florida, just north of Miami Beach. In there, risking their lives to try to save others because the situation is growing more dire by the moment. 99 people are unaccounted for at this hour. That's a number that's been going up throughout the day as more people have realized a loved one could be inside. Only one person is confirmed dead. No survivors, though, have been found since the collapse happened 17 hours ago. Surveillance video shows that horrifying moment that the building came crashing down early this morning as dawn was coming. Local officials say the 12 floors of the building literally pancaked, and you can see it from that surveillance video, obviously, about that pool length football field away. They still have no idea how such a thing happened.
I just had a chance to view the site up close, and I mean, the humanity that you see, the daily lives, the evidence of just people living their daily lives, and that everything evaporated in an instant. It's enormously devastating.
Rescuers have been able to save 37 people, including a 10-year-old boy. The boy you see here pulled out of the rubble. The man who first found that boy describing the moment when he heard the child yelling out for help.
He was just screaming, "Don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me." And so we wanted to stay with him, make sure that, you know, we got fire and police over there. So I was able to signal a police officer using the flashlight of my phone. They got up to him. He got a perspective, and then he got fire over there to start digging him out.
No word yet on the boy's family. But there are so many families holding out hope that their loved ones could still be okay. I'm going to speak to a man in just a moment who is looking for his mother and grandmother. But first, I want to go to Surfside, Florida, and Rosa Flores, who is there. So, Rosa, they are, you know, we just showed that video just in. They're, you know, they're in the basement there trying to drill everything they desperately can do to try to find people who may be alive. Are they still hopeful there are survivors?
Erin, they are. Right now, the focus is the search and rescue mission. Those moments, like you just described, where firefighters are shoring up that building to go inside looking for signs of life. At this hour, according to local authorities, one person has died, 102 people have been accounted for, and firefighters, in the meantime, are on a mission to find 99 others.
These images appear to show the moment that a 12-story high-rise partially collapsed in Surfside, Florida, Thursday morning.
My nephew was here with a wife and three small children, 2, 6, and 9. You never lose hope. I'm just asking God because they're in the affected area.
A massive search and rescue operation now underway for survivors among the rubble of Champlain Tower South.
I just need you guys to expedite the resources that I need over here. At least those 10 rescues with backboards and stretchers.
At least one person is dead and 10 injured, officials say. 99 people are still unaccounted for.
The rescuers are hearing sounds from the rubble. It's kind of hit or miss. You you get into a zone where you're so passionate and so focused and so just determined to make sure you're doing everything possible to save a life in an event like this.
This 10-year-old was lucky to get out alive. This man spotted the boy between the rubble and alerted rescuers.
I saw an arm sticking out of the wreckage, and he was screaming, you know, can you see me?
Another resident also narrowly escaped.
I looked down the hallway, and it's a very long hallway, probably 100 yards, 75 yards, and there was nothing there. It was just a pile of dust and rubble.
While the cause of the collapse remains unclear, work had been taking place on the roof.
There was work on the building being done to meet the 40-year standard, but it's not to say what the cause is.
And the nature of the collapse complicating rescue efforts.
The problem is the building has literally pancaked. It has gone down, and I mean there's just feet in between stories where there were 10 feet.
A nearby 50-unit hotel also evacuated.
As the alarms went off, it just got louder, and everybody started to panic, and we grabbed children and started running out the door.
For now, the focus remains on the rescue effort and providing survivors with the support they so desperately need.
We still have hope to be able to identify additional survivors, and the state of Florida, we're offering any assistance that we can.
Now, according to the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, firefighters have not been able to hear voices in the rubble as they're searching, but they have been hearing bangs. That, of course, is signs of life. Aaron, no word yet on what caused this collapse, but at some point, the Miami-Dade Police Department will be taking over to figure out what exactly went horribly wrong.
All right. Aaron. Thank you very much, Rosa. I'm joined now by Pablo Rodriguez. His mother lives in the building. His grandmother had been staying with her, and they both are missing tonight. Pablo, first of all, I'm so sorry for what you're going through. You know, how to even grasp the reality of what's happening. I know they're desperately searching. They're doing everything they can to find survivors. What is the latest you're hearing about the efforts to find your mother and your grandmother?
To be honest, Aaron, we haven't heard anything. We went to the community center this morning, gave her information, both of their informations, and we haven't heard anything from anyone. We've called in. We still can't get any information. They were in the section that completely collapsed, in the first tower that collapsed, so we're not exactly very hopeful, but we're not getting any information right now.
I'm just so sorry. I know that there were sounds from the rubble earlier today, and look, some people might be injured or you know, not able to speak, but alive. I know you said it's hard to be hopeful given where they were in the building, but do you still have hope that they may be rescued alive?
You always hold out hope. Until we definitively know, we are trying to stay hopeful. But after seeing the video of the collapse, it's increasingly difficult because they were in that section that was pancaked in, and in the first section that fell in, and then the other building fell on top of it. So it's not easy to watch.
I know your mom told you yesterday that she woke up in the middle of the night. And she yes. heard noises. And she, you know, for her to actually mention this to you, obviously, you know, in the context of everything being seemingly normal, right? She was worried enough to tell you about it. What did she say? What was she worried about?
She just told me that she had woken up around 3-4 in the morning and had heard like some creaking noises, some, you know, just like sort of creaking noises. They were loud enough to wake her up, but that was it. And then I just thought it was, you know, nothing. She just didn't sleep well, and that was it. So she didn't really pay any attention to it either. It was just like a comment that she made offhand. Like, that's why she woke up, and then she wasn't able to go back to sleep afterwards. But now, in hindsight, you know, you always wonder.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Had nothing happened, you wouldn't think anything of it. But now
right.
it's you realize you don't hear that in a building like that. You shouldn't hear
right.
that in a building like that. Pablo, you know, I know you just we were showing some pictures of you, your family, your mom, your grandmother, you were in Washington, and that's where you all just gotten back from. You know, your mother and grandmother were going to take your son to lunch today. You had a big birthday coming up for your grandmother in a few weeks. I mean, you know, you were living life. Finally, after everything. Yeah, you were living life.
Finally getting back to normal after the pandemic. We had gone up to D.C. to visit my brother because he lives up there. Then we went over to Philadelphia for a couple of days. It was a great trip with my mom. We got back last Saturday, and then today they were going to go pick him up to take him out to lunch. You know, they came over every single weekend to spend the day with him. So it's my son's, you know, it's going to be difficult.
I mean, are you even able to grapple with what has happened here? I mean, this is just something that no person would ever even comprehend or imagine happening.
It's hard to explain. It's waves of devastation with troughs of disbelief. It's just one second, you know, you're overwhelmed. It's really difficult not to break down now. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, another, you get a semblance of normalcy because you just say, well, it's impossible. This doesn't happen. Buildings don't just collapse. It's not real. So it's been like that all day.
Pablo, I am so sorry. And I know I, like everyone, you know, holds out that hope. I understand you're being realistic about it, but that hope that you do get a miracle.
I appreciate that. It's you know, we're praying for a miracle, but at the same time trying to be as realistic about it as possible. But yes, until we definitively know, there is hope. It's just, you know, dwindling by the minute.
All right, Pablo, thank you very much.
Thank you, Erin.
Jimmy Petronas is a state fire marshal who's been on the ground coordinating the emergency response. Jimmy, I don't know if you could hear Pablo. I mean, it's just the devastation that families are facing here. And I know your teams are doing everything they can humanly do. They're in the basement now. They're drilling everything to try to save a life. I mentioned to Pablo that you had heard some sounds from the rubble earlier today. At this point, are there any signs that there could be survivors still trapped?
Well, the men and women of Task Force 1 and Miami-Dade Fire Rescue are boots on the ground. There was almost 50 different departments responded at 1:30 in the morning last night. They have been working nonstop. The task force that is working right now, Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, they're a FEMA task force. They get deployed all over the world. And what you'll see at 7 o'clock at night will be the greatest effort. We will have over 80 men and women that will be working with other departments all at the same time to save lives. They won't stop till the mission's over.
I know you're using every device you can, sonar devices, among others, to try to hear any activity under the ground. Can you tell me what else rescuers are doing right now?
So the men and women that are working right now, they can only work in about 15-minute shifts. The level of exhaustion is enormous. As soon as they come out, they're carrying, you know, 80 pounds worth of gear. They're carrying, you know, protective equipment. They're carrying concrete saws. Everything has to be manually because of the sheer threat of a building that is unstable looming over them as they are crawling and tunneling under debris to save lives.
So what is the greatest challenge for you at this point? I mean, I understand what you're saying there, but even that 15 minutes in and out, that in and of itself has to be incredibly difficult.
So, you know, I would say the greatest challenge is the pace these men have to keep, these women have to keep. But they sign up for the job. They're amazing human beings. The best I've seen in humanity is what's happening right behind me. And the equipment that's been here on the ground, whether it be Valentine's Day, Christmas, New Year's, you name it, when you dial 911, these men and women show up and respond. And that's what they've been doing since 1:30 this morning. So, you know, the greatest challenge is just continue to stay focused and to drive. And what you're going to see tomorrow morning is you're going to see the task force from Tampa and St. Petersburg and Clearwater are going to be here. You'll see the task force here from Jacksonville. They're going to be coming to back up these guys so they can have a little bit of a break because they're not going to stop until every life that can be saved is saved.
Marshal Petronas, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next, you know, the question, What could cause a Florida high-rise built in 1981 to just collapse like a pancake in the early morning? Were there any warning signs? And more breaking news we're following tonight. President Biden with major breakthroughs on infrastructure and moments ago, breaking news on police reform. Plus the Delta variant fueling a tripling increase in COVID hospitalizations in Springfield, Missouri.
What percentage do you think it is of people you have now who are unvaccinated?
In the hospital, it's nearly 100% of the people hospitalized with COVID pneumonia are unvaccinated.
Breaking news. Officials say they still do not know what caused that deadly collapse of a 12-story residential building in Surfside, Florida. Right now, we're getting a new video of what the building looks like right now, literally as if it were sliced down the middle. There's literally, you know, just a, you could see, right? That would have been an HVAC. And it's just, boom, right off the middle. Search for survivors is desperately still underway. Right now, one person is confirmed dead, but 99 people are unaccounted for tonight. After the search and rescue is over, officials are going to focus on the cause of the collapse. And this is now of crucial import, to this building, to buildings nearby, to people everywhere. Out front now, Outer Road is Zizi Namini. He is the director of Florida International University's Moss School of Construction, Infrastructure, and Sustainability. He's a civil engineer who specializes in high-rise buildings, the corrosion of steel and concrete, and seismic events in high-rises. In other words, Professor, this is what you know. Have you ever seen anything like this just happen before?
You know, Erin, this is a very rare kind of event that takes place. You don't, these kind of collapses don't take place just every day. And so I have seen some collapses, the collapse of the building in Oklahoma City, that kind of comes to my mind. But in this case, I think there is a number of factors that could have contributed to this collapse. And it's going to take some time. I know there's a natural tendency that people want to find out exact cause of the collapse right away. But the way the structural engineer approached this type of problem is we collect all the data and we have the tools and the knowledge that we can simulate these scenarios in the computer and pinpoint exactly what caused the collapse.
I understand completely what you're saying. But of course, you know, you're looking at high-rise buildings all around this, and the mayor of Surfside just told CNN that there's a what he called a sister building a block away, but he says it's unimaginable that this would happen again. Now it's not unimaginable to anybody. It may be to you from an engineering perspective, and that's my question. How concerned are you that this could happen to another building nearby that may be in the same, they obviously don't have bedrock there, but, you know, sand.
Yeah. You know, that depends on what the outcome of the investigation is. Let's say, for example, if the outcome of the investigation is that it's because of the settlement, let's say, for example, that might have caused the foundation, then you need to take a look at the other similar buildings sitting in the same kind of foundation and so on. But my feeling is that usually a collapse like this doesn't happen just because of one factor. Mm-hmm. Usually several factors is combined and it's like a perfect storm. Every collapses that I have seen, it's not just one factor. There are several factors that take place. And in this particular case, I mean, the investigator, they're going to have to look at from the design, from the construction, the foundation system. And once all the data is collected, they're going to have to simulate this thing in computer and pinpoint. My own feeling is that the biggest lesson that we are going to get out of this collapse,
yeah,
is that we are going to have to inspect certain high-rise buildings located in certain locations more frequently.
Yes.
I think in the case of the bridge structures, for example, because of the collapse that took place in 1967, Silver Spring Bridge in West Virginia, we inspect every bridge in the U.S. once every 2 years. We don't have to do that in the case of the buildings. But I think at least we need to do maybe some inspection, maybe some aspect of the building every maybe 5 years or so. I think that's going to be the biggest lesson that's going to come out of this collapse. But we have to wait. I think the biggest thing that, biggest message that I think I can send is that there's a natural tendency trying to pinpoint what happened. We have to give a time to people who are investigating these things and do a good job trying to identify exactly what happened. And then the next step is going to be, what changes do we need to incorporate to our building code, the way we design the bridges, the buildings, the way we construct them, the way we inspect them, because the safety of the public is the number one issue for engineers. It's the number one issue.
As it should be. And of course, now people are afraid, and it's understandable that they would be. And as this desperate search continues. Professor, I appreciate your time. Thank you tonight.
You bet.
And next, breaking news. Well, infrastructure, what's happening in Washington, and now police reform moving ahead. What does it mean for other issues that Biden said were crucial? Plus, alarm and regrets over the rapid strain of the Delta COVID strain across the United States and its effects.
I hope people do think about getting the vaccination. It's your prerogative, but I wish I had done it to just avoid this.
Surgeon General of the United States will be out front. Breaking news on President Biden. Breakthroughs tonight on two major priorities for him. Moments ago, Congresswoman Karen Bass and Senators Cory Booker and Tim Scott announcing they have, quote, reached agreement on a framework for bipartisan police reform. This just hours after Biden announced a bipartisan Senate agreement on a sweeping $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan. Biden saying that the deal will not only create millions of jobs in the post-pandemic economy, he says it also shows there is still hope for democracy.
Neither side got everything they wanted in this deal. That's what it means to compromise. And it reflects something important. It reflects consensus. The heart of democracy requires consensus. We reaffirm once again, we are the United States of America.
Chief White House correspondent Caitlin Collins and Chief Congressional correspondent Manu Raju are covering the breaking developments tonight. Caitlin, let me start with you. So, for Biden, these are two huge breakthroughs on agenda items, infrastructure and police reform. Biden also delivering on one of his major campaign promises here.
Yeah, bipartisanship. So I think the White House is still waiting to see what's happening with this framework on the police reform deal. But clearly they're feeling very good about the infrastructure agreement today because you saw President Biden come out, officially endorse it. And so it's still not clear that it is going to actually pass both chambers of Congress, make it to his desk for him to sign. The White House even acknowledged we're still a good ways away from that. But just the idea that you saw President Biden come out with this bipartisan group and talk about this really does speak to what he said all along, that he said he wanted to be able to get done if he did make it into the White House. And even today when he was speaking in the East Room about this deal, not just the outlines of it, how they want to pay for it, what they actually want to get done with it, he talked about the fact that there were Democrats who encouraged him to stop negotiating with Republicans. And he said that he remained in those negotiations. He had his team keep going and keep talking to them about it. And clearly he believes that's a follow through of what he said he believed could happen. And so now the question really is, How do they get everyone else on board? What does this look like when they take it to the broader group on Capitol Hill?
So, Manu, on that front, what can you tell us about the breaking news here that just happened here about a bipartisan outline for police reform, which really just crossed in the past few moments? Obviously, Karen Bass, Tim Scott leading up that.
Yeah, it's different, an uptick in their language, rosier language. I've been talking to all those negotiators repeatedly over the last several weeks. They've been saying various things, either they're getting close or they're getting set back in the talks. It's been going on and on for months. This is the first time they've said they've reached an agreement on a framework. Now, that also means, though, Aaron, there are lots of details that they have to sort out. They do not have a deal yet among this group of negotiators, and they certainly don't have a bill that they have written, and they don't have anything that has been accepted by House Republicans, by Senate Republicans, by Senate Democrats, and by House Democrats. So there is a long way to go. There are some key sticking points that they're still trying to resolve, namely how to bring civil lawsuits against police officers who are protected now by qualified qualified immunity standard. There have been some discussions about compromise language on that. They have not resolved that issue. Other issues as well remain on the table, but that qualified immunity issue remains the big sticking point. So can they get there, Aaron? A big question, but a difference in tone among the negotiators today.
Which is, you know, obviously something all Americans want to celebrate. But Manu, I want to understand here, you know, we talk about a bipartisan deal, you know, for example, on infrastructure. The House Speaker Nancy Pelosi then comes out with a warning about the bipartisan infrastructure deal. Here she is.
There ain't going to be an infrastructure bill unless we have the reconciliation bill passed by the United States Senate.
So Manu, you know, what she's saying here is that infrastructure bill is bipartisan, but you're not going to get your bipartisan deal if we don't get everything we couldn't get in it on our own without a single Republican vote. I mean, maybe I'm not translating it completely accurately, but tell me how this boils down to bipartisanship then.
Well, that's going to be the real challenge here, because some Republican senators who are open or supportive of that bipartisan deal may balk now because they don't want to give in to this Democratic strategy to try to pass the larger reconciliation bill that would include a whole host of Biden priorities to expand the social safety net. Just today, Lindsey Graham, who endorses this bipartisan deal, warned that he would vote against it if the Democrats do carry forward with this strategy. And Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, came out hard against the strategy. He has not weighed in on the deal itself, but he has said that he's very pessimistic now because his concern is that it puts them in a very, very challenging position to endorse the strategy because the reconciliation bill undoubtedly would propose raising taxes, including on corporations and high earners, which is a red line for Democrats. But they have to do this, Aaron, because they need to get their liberals on board behind the bipartisan deal because they want this larger bill to go through. And then they have to also get the people like Joe Manchin on board to support this larger Democratic-only approach. Today, he would not commit to that when I asked him about it because he wants to see the deal details. And he's also concerned about the large price tag they're talking about here. So a long way to go and a lot of hurdles to overcome for this to become law.
And so, Caitlin, bottom line, does Biden, is he confident this will actually happen? This will go through?
He said today he didn't want to say he was confident because he said he doesn't know how Democrats are going to vote. But one line that he had was really telling. And he said, yes, the Democratic Party is divided, but he said they're also rational. That means he does think at the end of the day they're not going to vote against an infrastructure deal because there is this squabbling and infighting among them about what the priorities should be, what the tactics should be, and what this should actually look like. So he does seem to feel somewhat confident, though he wouldn't explicitly say it. We should be clear about what that was going to look like. And he made some news in his remarks as well, saying that he would not sign the bipartisan deal that he had just negotiated if he did not also get that bigger reconciliation package that the liberal progressives, progressive liberals have been pushing for, talking about what they want to see on his desk. So that is significant in and of itself, saying that he also agrees with them. He wants both of those packages on his desk. Of course, that's something that Mitch McConnell is already criticizing him for.
Yep. And this is going to be the real question, right? All of a sudden, if that's your strategy, do you lose your filibuster-proof majority for the infrastructure bill? Thank you both so much. And next, as the deadly Delta COVID strain takes hold across the United States, hospitalizations are spiking, and people who are vaccinated are still struggling with that decision. And Britney Spears wants her life back. So what is her daily life like now? And what's happening right now at this moment, live pictures in Surfside, Florida, of the devastation where rescue crews are searching for survivors desperately every moment after that condo collapsed. Tonight, the highly transmissible coronavirus Delta variant, first detected in India, has now been found in a cluster of cases at a Nevada elementary school, including two with children. It comes as the variant is now spreading, known to be spreading in every state but one. I think it's pretty safe to say it's there, too, but this is what we know technically. And in Missouri, the state hardest hit so far by the Delta variant, hospitals are again overwhelmed by the virus. Martin Savage is out front.
In Springfield, Missouri, coronavirus hospitalizations are up more than 225% since the beginning of June. The region's two major hospital systems are once more worried about being overwhelmed.
it appears to be related to the Delta variant. We began to get news of Delta variant about 5 weeks ago.
The Delta variant, the same variant blamed for the catastrophic surge of COVID cases and deaths in India, is quickly becoming more prominent in the U.S. At a press conference this week, local health officials said it makes up 93% of COVID cases in Springfield and surrounding Greene County.
34 cases were hospitalized due to COVID-related illness in mid-May. As of yesterday, we had 155 cases hospitalized due to COVID-related illness. That is the highest it's been since January.
The hospitals report many of their new patients are young and, until recently, healthy. What's more, medical experts say just about all those hospitalized share something in common.
What percentage do you think it is of people you have now who are unvaccinated?
In the hospital, it's nearly 100% of the people hospitalized with COVID pneumonia are unvaccinated.
Health experts say the current vaccines by Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson are all effective at reducing severity of illness and hospitalizations caused by the Delta variant. But the county's vaccination rate is running behind the national rate of 45%.
Of those eligible, we're at 37.7%.
You realize you're behind?
We do, yeah.
In other parts of the state, the numbers are far worse. More than 20 counties in Missouri report less than 20% of their populations fully vaccinated. Counties that voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump in 2020.
There's been a lot of misinformation that has definitely played a tremendous role in politicizing this entire situation, and that information has definitely played a part in people's fears.
Springfield's acting health director, Katie Towns, says local health departments are doing just about anything to encourage more people to get vaccinated. Like this event at a local brewery offering free beer and a shot, as in vaccine. Will Branch says it was pressure from his family and not the beer that finally got him over his hesitancy.
What was it that kept you from getting the vaccine?
Fear. Fear. I don't really have any other answer other than I was scared of a new thing.
Louis Michael wishes he'd got the vaccine.
I was short of breath for a little bit.
He and his wife, Patty, both ended up in Mercy Hospital with serious COVID complications. He says not getting the vaccine was a huge mistake.
I hope people do think about getting the vaccination. It's your prerogative, but I wish I had done it to just avoid this.
Fortunately, Michael and his wife are doing much better thanks to expert care. But doctors and nurses at local hospitals say after an exhausting year and a half of battling COVID, this latest surge is having a significant impact on morale, saying it's harder to again risk their own health and well-being for someone who chose not to get vaccinated.
I think when the staff's putting themselves at risk in these situations and they feel like other people aren't willing to take the vaccine despite their risk, that's a hard one for some people to swallow.
Medical experts say if the Delta variant can take off, explode here, as it appears to be doing, it can happen just about anywhere where there are low vaccination rates. And in fact, they hope that states that have low vaccination rates are paying very close attention to all of these developments. And they also point out that this is potentially a much more contagious and much more dangerous variant. They know that they're not out of the woods. In fact, they're barely into the woods here. Things could get a whole lot worse. Aaron?
All right, Morton, thank you very much. I want to bring in the U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy now. And Dr. Murthy, I'm glad to talk to you again. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances, though. The Delta variant is across this country. In Colorado, they're admitting what I think everybody already knows, which is it's a lot more widespread than testing even indicates at this point. You saw what happened in the U.K. We saw what, it is what it is. Math is math. How worried are you about the numbers right now?
Well, Aaron, it's great to see you again as well. And I'm really worried about the Delta variant. This is the most transmissible variant that we've seen so far, likely more than double with the transmission potential of the version of COVID we were dealing with last year in the United States. And it also appears from the UK data to potentially be more dangerous as well in terms of the severity of illness it causes. The UK has been a cautionary tale for us, Aaron. We've seen that the people who are predominantly getting sick there with the Delta variant are young people. And it's now nearly 100% of the new COVID cases in the UK and rapidly growing here in the United States, exceeding 20% of our cases, doubling, in fact, in just 2 weeks. So I'm really worried for those who are unvaccinated. On the other hand, Aaron, if you are vaccinated, the news is good because we've found that the vaccines, you know, particularly the mRNA vaccines, we know from studies are highly effective against the Delta variant. And we have good reason to believe that Johnson & Johnson will be very effective as well. But if you are not vaccinated, you are even more at risk than you even were over the past year.
I'm glad you, but just as a quick point, you mentioned Johnson & Johnson there. We've been waiting, but you're feeling confident that Johnson & Johnson will show similar efficacy as Pfizer and Moderna did?
Well, we don't know if it'll be exactly the same numbers, but we feel pretty good that it'll likely be effective, particularly at reducing the risk of hospitalization and death, the outcomes we worry about the most. The J&J vaccine, if you look at the other variants, is particularly the 1.3.5 variant, first located in South Africa, which was a really worrisome variant, the J&J vaccine actually has done quite well against that in terms of hospitalizations and death. And the AstraZeneca vaccine, which was tested and found to be very effective against the Delta variant in the UK against hospitalizations and death, is almost like a cousin of the J&J vaccine in terms of the both using a similar platform. So good reason to believe J&J should work.
Should work. All right. So, you know, you heard R. Martin Savage in Missouri, right? And pretty much every single person in that Missouri hospital was not vaccinated. They say nearly 100%. So I don't know if there's any kind of breakthrough case there to raise, but I know that they're saying essentially 100%. This is where the politics come in. The state's counties with the lowest vaccination rates in that state voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And now there's, you know, a Republican governor taking this head on. Here he is.
All you're doing is entering the death drawing. If I knew for certain that there was going to be 8 or 9 people die by next Tuesday, and I could be one of them if I don't take the vaccine, what in the world do you think I would do? I mean, I would run over top of somebody because I don't want to take the chance when the wheel spins, that it could come up Jim Justice.
Vic, does that work? You know, I spoke to the widow of a woman whose husband, she wore a mask in the interview. He wore masks in Florida. He was in that Manatee government office building, but he hadn't gotten the vaccine, had been hesitant. He died. And they presume it's from this new variant. She was still unwilling to tell others that they should get the vaccine, you know, despite her grief and her great loss. You know, how do you reach people on the vaccine at this point?
Well, Aaron, it's such an important question. And there are three primary reasons people are not vaccinated right now. One has to do with access. Some people are still having trouble getting time off from work and getting, to get the vaccine. And we've done a lot of things to make that easier. Another reason is motivation. There's some people who believe that COVID's going away. They see cases coming down. They think maybe this is not important anymore. It absolutely is. Delta's an example. But the third reason, Aaron, is I think the most challenging one, which is misinformation. There is so much misinformation out there about the vaccine coming through so many channels, a lot of it being spread on social media, and it's inducing a lot of fear among people. 2/3, Aaron, of those who are unvaccinated in polls say that they either believe the myths about COVID-19 or think that they might be true. And that's a large number. So what we've got to do and what we've been doing increasingly over the last several months is not only speak directly to people, but really work with local trusted messengers, local doctors and nurses, local faith leaders and educators to make sure we're reaching people with accurate information so they can hopefully make the decision to get vaccinated, recognizing this is the single best way to safeguard their health and protect their communities.
All right, Dr. Murthy, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Of course. Great to see you, Aaron. Take care.
All right. You too. And the breaking news right now, I want to go back to our top story tonight. 99 people still unaccounted for after that building collapse near Miami Beach. No miracle that we know of in the past few moments here as we have been talking about COVID. And I want to go now to Kenneth Director. He is a lawyer who represents the Association of Residents inside the building. Kenneth, I in that capacity, I know obviously you know a lot of people in the building. Can you tell me the concerns that residents have had? Has anybody been raising prior to this about the building?
There have never been, and good evening, and thank you for having me. The association has operated the condominium for nearly 40 years and has maintained the building, and as a matter of fact, has had extensive engineering studies done over the past several months in preparation for a 40-year certification process. Nothing appeared either to the engineers or to any of the residents that would suggest anything like this was imminent. Nothing.
So,
and there have been a,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Erin, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, no. I just wanted to follow up to that point because I talked to a man, Pablo Rodriguez. His mother lives in the building. His grandmother was also in the building staying with her, and they were in the part first affected. Obviously, they are missing. So he said his mother actually just yesterday told him she heard creaking noises in the middle of the night before last, and a loud crash. It was so loud that it woke her up, and she wasn't able to go back to sleep. So she told him in that context, you know, sort of conversationally, but something that anybody living in a high rise would say, well, gosh, being woken up by creaks and a loud bang, that should be disturbing. And certainly now you hear this. Hindsight makes you wonder about what she said. Had you heard anything like that, or does that shock you?
It doesn't shock me because buildings creak and make noise, and I've not heard anything like that. I will tell you that there are many, many, many buildings throughout Florida that have been through 40-year certification, and there are many, many more that have done concrete work and have had spalling or cracking concrete. And I've been at this for 40 years. No matter how bad the concrete has gotten, nobody has ever seen anything like this occur as a result of spalling concrete.
So what are you hearing from residents who survived the collapse about what they experienced, Kenneth?
Well, I'm going to go down to the property tomorrow because today was obviously a day of just trying to get their arms around and process this. The primary concern, as I'm sure you can understand, for the next couple days is the humanitarian issue, to account for the people who are missing and to do everything reasonably possible to not only save lives, but also try to provide some care to the people who were displaced from the building, because this was a building where a lot of people lived full time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very clear from these stories we're hearing. Kenneth, thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. And next, we're following the breaking news. We'll be right back. Tonight, Britney Spears speaking out just moments ago for the first time since her bombshell testimony. The singer posting on Instagram tonight saying, quote, "I apologize for pretending like I've been okay the past 2 years. I did it because of my pride, and I was embarrassed to share what happened to me." Spears is asking to end the conservatorship that has controlled her $60 million estate for more than a decade. She says she wants her life back. So what is life like for her now? Sullen Serfati is out front.
If I wasn't under the restraints that I'm under right now, you know, with all the lawyers and doctors and people analyzing me every day and all that kind of stuff, like, if that wasn't there, I'd feel so liberated.
From big life decisions like having more children to small daily ones like being allowed to buy new kitchen cabinets, Britney Spears told the court her daily life is completely controlled by what she calls her abusive conservatorship, leaving her very little freedom.
It's like, it's bad.
The pop star says she has no say in the medicine she takes, describing one incident when she did not want to perform an additional show in Las Vegas. She was forced to go on lithium, describing how the therapist lined up by the conservatorship. "Out of nowhere, he took me off my normal meds I've been on for 5 years. I felt drunk," she says. "They wouldn't let me get my car to go anywhere for a month." Spears says making objections about her life like this would often come with consequences, even for simple things. Once, when she objected to a certain dance move for an upcoming show, she was told she wasn't cooperating or following guidelines in rehearsals. That particular incident, along with her refusal to do a Las Vegas show, Spears said eventually led to her being forced into a mental health facility against her will. I packed my bags and went to that place. I worked 7 days a week, no days off, which in California, the only similar thing to this is called sex trafficking. Making anyone work against their will, taking all their possessions away, credit cards, cash, phone, passport. Court records obtained by the New York Times showing the millionaire is limited to a $2,000 weekly allowance, and she said she was made to perform when sick, once when she was running a temperature of over 100 degrees. Spears says she is forced to do therapy twice a week and meet with a psychiatrist once a week, and is not allowed to have those sessions in her home, but in an office where she feels exposed by paparazzi. It's embarrassing and it's demoralizing. I deserve privacy when I go. Spears' struggles were highlighted in the New York Times documentary Framing Britney Spears, released in February.
When I tell them the way I feel, it's like they hear me, but they really not listening. They're hearing what they want to hear. They're not really listening to what I'm telling them.
Sondland, conservatorships are not new, obviously, among celebrities, but there have been a series, it seems, of high-profile ones recently.
There absolutely have been, Erin, and conservatorships are intended for people who aren't able to take care of themselves. We all know actress Amanda Bynes. She was placed under a conservatorship with her parents in 2013. That was after her high-profile struggle with alcohol and drugs, as was radio icon Casey Kasem, as his health worsened over the years shortly before his death. Erin.
Oh, all right. Sondland, thank you very much for your time. And thanks very much to all of you for joining us. Our breaking news coverage continues of that race against time in Surfside, Florida. Let's hand it off right now to AC360 for that.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.